This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Richard Wollstonecraft, Pilleter, Count Fosco, and J.G. Michael. It's great having you guys on.
Hi.
What's up?
Richard is live from the Black Lodge. How are you enjoying it there?
Well, it's very nice. Yes, I'm doing some redecoration. You know, I think we need a few new statues, and I've been having a chat to Bob, and we think, you know, there's definitely some home improvements that can be made down here.
Can we have some coffee?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's a new brand. I think we're talking about, you know, really branding. And, you know, I think the Bad Lodge has been getting a bad name. You know what I mean? Like, people seem to think it's associated with evil, which of course it does.
Yeah. We got to rebrand.
I think it's kind of a precursor to Vaporwave.
Maybe.
What is Vaporwave again? I've heard of that.
Well, it's like an art form that developed on the internet.
Yeah. The statue and
I
the
just,
checker.
This morning, my girlfriend broke up with me, and I was at the bar, but I was at this place called Bahama Breeze, and it looks like a, maybe in some way it tries to be 80s in 2017, but it looks like some vaporwave aesthetic because it's irrationally looking like some bad 80s prop in Scarface. And just, I don't know if you would call that vaporwave, but...
Well, it's interesting. There's a different 80s aesthetic. I mean, maybe it's even 90s a little bit with Twin Peaks, but like, you know, there's certainly an 80s quality to it, and obviously also with David Lynch kind of 50s quality to the things he's doing. And the 80s has been a surprisingly Promethean decade in the sense that, like, for whatever reason, the 80s, you know, like, appears to be repeating itself quite a bit. I thought the last decade, the double O's, had a lot of, you know, obviously 20 years after things, there's always a bit of a repetition for whatever reason historically with music and some kind of, you know, like, you know, artistic ideas and things begin to repeat themselves slightly. And, you know, I think that with Trump, we're definitely getting another 80s, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you couldn't get a guy more 80s than Donald Trump, you know what I mean? Like, it's everything about him. And, you know, the 80s is actually my favorite decade. I mean, obviously I was, you know, I was, at the beginning of the decade I was 10 and at the end of it I was 20. So that's a very important period in anyone's life. And it's, you know, it's when you're most alive and many, you know, you're young and dumb and full of cum and all those things. And, you know, you're just really, you know, becoming an adult really. And it was just such a wonderful fucking decade because the internet wasn't around, so that was incredibly wonderful, and we had real connections with people, even though this all stuff is all fantastic as well. So, you know, as Peter Christopherson said, all times are interesting as long as you hang out with interesting people.
I like how David Lynch fuses genres, as you were saying. You see this in a lot of his films. Blue Velvet is obviously very 50s, early 60s. Dune is a fusion of a lot of different genres and aesthetics from like the ancient to the futuristic. With Twin Peaks, I think the new one does, it's a lot more obviously technologically advanced as far as the cinematography, but there's a quality in the original, the way it portrays the town. It portrays the town in a very idealistic sense. It focuses very specifically on the town's landmarks, like the Great Northern Hotel, the diner, the roadhouse. With the new one, it sort of presents the town. It does present the town in decay, but it kind of shows it more realistically as it is, like the way it shows the street, the way it would look like driving down it, or the way it looks like on Google Maps.
I think it's kind of been a shock, the new series, to many people, because it's really not like the original Twin Peaks at all. And in many ways, obviously, it is, obviously, because the similar characters, I mean, and the same characters, of course. But it's you know, the first season of Twin Peaks was extremely strong narrative, where you were presented with an almost irresistible, you know, kind of murder mystery that then just began with each kind of episode, but, you know, another kind of layer was peeled off the onion.
Well, it's interesting as it's changing genres as well, because it starts out as a kind of parody of a cheesy soap opera. And I'll be honest, I mean, I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan now, but when I was younger and I heard about it as a teenager, I kind of just dismissed it, like, oh, it's probably another soap opera.
It was inspired by Frank Weiss, I believe. You know, like a dark, Yeah, that's the thing that I've never actually seen that show, but it was a TV show in the 60s. Obviously, Lynch is a person of the 60s in many ways, with his interest in transcendental meditation and other kind of, you know, hippie. He's almost got a kind of hippie quality to him at times, oddly enough. But that's interesting because he's obviously got a lot of other dimensions working within him. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just a really fascinating kind of milieu. But what I think is happening, because after he did Twin Peaks, David Lynch did a lot of very interesting work. He did Fire Walk With Me, which was obviously the sequel, which kind of altered the world.
Fire Walk With Me is the prequel. And I actually made the mistake of watching it in the wrong order. I just finished the original. But it's a prequel that reveals the whole story. So I watched the first few shows of the new series. Then I went back and watched... Well, I watched Fire Walk With Me. And then after that, I watched the original series. So that kind of spoiled it. But I still enjoyed watching it. But it starts out as that kind of... Feels a little bit like a soap opera with the murder mystery theme. And then it becomes... a kind of murder mystery to a dark comedy, and basically the ending, it ends as a surreal horror.
Well, could I,
it was booed at Cannes when it came out. I remember the film because I was obsessed with it. I have every you know, like, copy of the magazine wrapped in plastic.
Well, I was going to say, you focused on the soap opera element. It's also interesting how, it's very much inspired by film noir with the murder mystery element. Actually, it's inspired by an old film noir with Vincent Price called Laura. I don't know if any of you guys have seen that.
Yeah. Well, Laura for the title.
But I've heard that it was inspired by that. But he does pay homage to film noir a lot, because one example is whenever the soundtrack by Badalamenti is brilliant, but every scene has a specific song. That goes with what's happening in the narrative. So if there's a scene where they're kind of investigating, they play that 1950s crime drama music.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, yeah. It's definitely influenced by film noir. And, I mean, you know, I mean, David Lynch, you know, he's somebody who does... He does have a lot of influences. He sort of, in a way, he hides them probably better than someone like Quentin Tarantino. I mean, David Lynch is fairly remarkably original. But what I was trying to say about Twin Peaks is what the new Twin Peaks show is really, I think, reflecting of the work he did after he actually made the original show. Films like Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, Inland Empire. They're the three major works.
Well, I heard that... I haven't actually watched Mulholland Drive yet. I plan on watching that next.
Oh, that's
true. But I heard originally Mulholland Drive was planned as a sequel... based on Audrey Horn trying to make it in Hollywood, but then they ended up changing it.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that was originally meant to be a, you know, like a 15-hour TV series at least, and might have had one or two seasons, you know. So, and it was obviously not going to be set in Twin Peaks. And what the most interesting thing about the new Twin Peaks is most of the new scenes in the new Twin Peaks show are not in Twin Peaks. You know, slowly there are more and more Twin Peaks scenes appearing with each episode. But, like, yeah, I mean, he's cast a huge net. And I think, you know, this to me feels like almost a, you know, a large kind of final, it could be, I mean, I hope it's not a final state, but I hope he continues to make films another 10, 20 years. But, like, he's definitely, like, referencing a lot of his other work within the new show. Like, you know, The Bad Cooper, for example, in the new show.
Oh, the doppelganger, yeah.
Ganger is wearing basically Frank's jacket from Blue Velvet, and he's sort of playing Frank in a way. You know, like the evil, you know, like, you know, that was one of the major questions in the whole work. You know, why are there people like Frank? Why is there so much trouble in this world? I mean, it's a very profound question. You know, why are there evil people? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and Lynch is attempting to kind of answer that, you know, with his own kind of metaphysical, you know, musing up. And obviously he seems to prefer the idea of demonic possession. And then with the new show, you've been introduced to this new character of Dougie Jones, who appears to be a sort of, I have no idea what Dougie Jones is.
Oh, yeah, because I watched that first. You sort of have an understanding if you watch the original. If you don't watch the original series, the Dougie Jones thing makes no sense whatsoever, because basically what happens is his doppelganger is out, and then Dougie Jones, you don't even know if that's the real Agent Cooper. His memory is completely erased. But the whole doppelganger thing, like, I watched the new part first, so I found it really confusing. The whole scene where he just ends up in Las Vegas with this new family and his whole memories erased, and really bizarre.
It's a very unusual decision. I think it's actually irritating fans a little bit. Like, because, you know, I watch a lot of television shows. There are various kind of, you know, like story arcs that you can go through, you know, in a series. And this is essentially making the lead character sick. You know what I mean? Or there's something wrong with the lead character. For example, Swearingen was sick in the third season of Deadwood. He was like the best character in it. He was so dynamic. It's like suddenly, you know, Donald Trump is like wandering around on crutches for like a year, and it's not interesting. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you want the dynamic troublemaker to be the dynamic troublemaker. And I guess with someone like, you know, Kyle MacLachlan, you want him out there solving these things. I don't think he's probably going to be like this for much longer. I'd say another episode.
Also, the narrative, the original narrative is this crime murder mystery of Laura Palmer leading to Cooper ending up in the Black Lodge. But this one, it's this more grandiose narrative about this supernatural force. And I remember in the original, what's his name? The general talks about this kind of secret government conspiracy where there's these different people who are trying to tap into the power of the Black Lodge and utilize it. So that could be the direction of the new series. It could be more, but that could be pretty much where it's going.
I think it is, and I think it's a homecoming too. That, like, you know, it's clearly that's what's happening. I mean, Cooper. I mean, in a weird way though, that the fact that he is, it's like coming out of a coma. Clearly, you know, going to the Black Lodge for 25 years. In a sense that, like, it would fuck you up, and that, you know, obviously, you know, this element of almost kind of, you know, supernatural things, and that I guess that, you know, David Lynch can shake him out of it anytime he likes, but he at least wants to explore this. I mean, it's both sad and it's funny, you know what I mean? It's at the same time, which is unusual, and it's something new I've never really seen in his work before, what he's doing with this Dougie Jones character. I think Naomi Watts is fantastic as Janie Jones, and this Sonny Jim is like his son. It's like a send-up of, what's it called? Like, you know, like a typical suburban guy, you know what I mean? That maybe all of us are in many ways, you know what I mean? Like, you know, with the girlfriend or the kid or whatever, and then, it's with a normal job or whatever. It's taking the piss. It's like the good, the bad, and the Dougie, someone said. You know what I mean? Like, there's the evil person, the good person, and then there's just the mediocre twat who just gets into trouble, you know, which is Dougie Jones. So, but clearly Cooper is coming back. That is Cooper. He's just obviously been through such incredible trauma that he's a bit fucked up. And he's obviously, there's no way David Lynch is leaving him like that for the whole fucking series. It was ridiculous. So Cooper will be back in my view within two episodes. And then he'll be heading back to Twin Peaks and there'll be a new murder. The new Laura Palmer clearly turned up in a recent episode. I can't remember the name of the actress who played her.
Oh, well, there's the whole thing where that principal goes and commits, the high school principal goes and commits the murder. And that's another thing that's very, it basically goes back to the whole thing with Leland Palmer murdering his daughter. But that's very confusing if you haven't watched the original too.
That's Teresa Banks, the new murder that just happened in the small town of wherever it was. Because you remember in Fire Walk With Me, there was the murder of Teresa Banks. And that was committed by Leland Palmer, but obviously it was unsolved. And then came the murder of Laura Palmer, and then and Ronette Polanski, which is clearly a play on Roman Polanski, was raped. They're the three major crimes, at least that began the show, so to speak. And it's clear that we've seen now the new Teresa Banks murder, which is the one that was in that weird town done by that principal, who probably didn't do it because, you know, as he said, he doesn't remember being there. He only dreamt he was there. So, David clearly explores the power of dreams and all this stuff very potently. And, the new Laura Palmer is clearly that. Did you see the episode where the girl does cocaine in the car with some guy who's like a young kind of hipster? He's like the new Bobby Banks.
He just ran over a kid who runs over the boy.
That's the new Bobby Briggs. And his girlfriend is the new Laura Palmer. Even though I don't know that will happen, but I mean that was what I thought would happen when Twin Peaks was coming back. I thought it would begin with the murder of another, you know, one-year-old girl, and then, you know, Cooper comes back, blah, blah, blah. And obviously that's probably happening, but, you know, David Lynch being the, irascible, he does things that are different to people's expectations. And I think...
Have you met David Lynch?
I never have, and I would like to have, obviously. My friend Mark Savage is a filmmaker from Australia who... he's about 6 or 7 years older than me, and in the 80s I worked with him on a feature called Marauders and all this. He ended up working with David Lynch. He worked with him as an editor on Inland Empire and collaborated with him on some, David does a lot of interesting other art projects and video installation stuff and, you know, various bits and pieces. And, he did work with him. So he had a lot of interesting stories to tell me about David and... he is an unusual guy from some of the stories I've heard from Mark. But I actually know where he lives. Someone gave me his address once. I can't remember who it was. So I've done things like drop off a bunch of catalogs to the Melbourne Underground Film Festival, and
it's the Hollywood Hills, I think.
It's in the Hollywood Hills. It's just off Mulholland Drive. And, he's got, like, you know, one building that's, like, his production company, I think, and then one that's his house. And it's basically the house that's in Lost Highway. That's where he actually lives.
One thing I really do like about David Lynch is he does put a lot of emphasis on design and aesthetics. A lot of filmmakers neglect that, or they're very kind of... David Lynch is someone who's... very passionate about the visual arts as well.
He's a remarkable genius. And, there's few filmmakers operating at the level he's operating at. And he does, at least with other films, he would actually build parts of the set sometimes. Like, he's a kind of carpenter. And he's got that kind of 50s, that 50s kind of dad can do, Let's go do it, boys.
He's hilarious as the FBI agent when he's hitting on Shelley.
Absolutely, he's hilarious as that. And, that is when I thought the new show began to really cook again, when Gordon Cole turned up with Agent Rosenfeld, who's like the smarmy, Jewish guy, but who's lovable. And I thought that was, Jewish FBI agent. I love characters. They're fantastic.
Well, I was going to say, Richard, I was wondering what you thought of the, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I always saw Laura Palmer as an extension of Lynch's obsession with Marilyn Monroe. He's written songs about Marilyn Monroe for his... Project Blue Bob. Do you see that in the Laura Palmer story arc at all, or no?
I was looking at the different actresses in there. To me, Laura Palmer kind of just more symbolizes, like, she's attractive, but she's more kind of like your girl next door who has this dark secret. I think Audrey's more the one who has the 50s starlet look.
Yeah, I think that, what's the name of that murder in Los Angeles where the woman was cut in half?
Oh, the Black Dahlia.
The Black Dahlia, I think that is the case that's the influence on Twin Peaks a bit. David Lynch does have strong influences, but he presents them in such a way that, they're remarkably new and they're also remarkably him, Like, so even though he has strong influences, maybe you can detect them sometimes, the work he produces is really a level of stunning originality. Like this in the new show, there's all this stuff in New York. With this weird kind of
the glass box. Yes, I think. Do you remember? Box. Oh yeah, where they're having sex and they get killed. I think that's Matt. Isn't that Madeline Zima from Californication? Do you remember? Have you seen that? She was the one who plays that teenage girl who is. She sleeps with David Duchovny and blackmails him.
I like that. I thought that was great, and she's a really. It's a shame she got, spoiler alert, I guess she got killed in the opening episode. But in the Twin Peaks, it doesn't mean you're dead, though, because clearly you can come and go from the Black Lodge and be okay, as Cooper just proved. Well, not okay, but,
What's interesting is how do they get... Because Cooper entered the Black Lodge through the physical location at Glastonbury Grove. A lot of people go there for dying. So is it like an afterlife? Or another dimension? It could be like a metaphor for hell, or it could just be another dimension.
It's clearly purgatory or hell. There's no doubt about it.
You were saying it's like there's a sort of Christian theology about the afterlife. Christian theology of the afterlife says that their concept of the hell is dying and unrepentant sin. Then there's a whole sort of Native American mythology where the Chief warns, tells Cooper that the Native American mythology that if you lack the courage to face the Black Lodge, then it destroys your soul. So basically, it's fear is what brings people to the Black Lodge. So it's he kind of combines different mythology. Then there's also aspects of kind of a Crowleyan occultism. So it's sort of a big combination of different influences.
I'm not saying it's like a textbook Christian work. I just think the overreaching, forces of light and darkness, heaven and hell, and also the way he ended Fire Walk With Me with a kind of angel inside the Black Lodge that clearly was rescuing Laura Palmer to some extent, or that, that people could actually be rescued from purgatory or hell. I mean, which clearly is possible if there is a God and there is all these places. Clearly, if that was the will of God, you could do it. You know what I mean? So, it's interesting. But definitely he's using occultism, absolutely, with the whole Black Lodge, which is, back to the Golden Dawn, Aleister Crowley, all that stuff, and Indian mythology, and he's mixing it up, with his own style and, producing the work.
Do you view the Hellfire Club as a kind of version of the Black Lodge?
At the time, yeah, I did. I was playing around with, I was in my 20s and playing around with kind of, flirtations with Satanism. I was never a serious Satanist, and I never joined the Church of Satan because I just thought I was just interested in it. I was intellectually interested in it. Even when I first did it, I sensed there was something dangerous about it. And then I did actually meet people who were into it and people who could cast curses on people. And, if anything, I was probably I wouldn't have considered myself a Christian in my 20s. Absolutely. I was sort of taking the piss a bit also with Hellfire Club. But, the occult stuff that I saw, and I didn't really get into it majorly, but it did scare me enough to make me think it's absolutely real. And then that when you realize the occult is real, when you realize evil is real, when you realize the devil is sort of real, well, then everything else sort of becomes real, technically, if you think about it. So it became almost, and I'm not the first person to have noticed things like that. J.K. Heisman's, who Anne Sturzinger wrote a book on, wrote a book called Labar, which is, about a young guy getting interested in Satanism, kind of heading back to Mother Church, which is, I don't know if that's where I'm headed, but I certainly have an interest in Christianity and a respect for it that I didn't have, because I think, it does, in a way, represent the forces of good and blah, 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 at least it's attempting to, whether it's successful or not, that's debatable.
What do you think about the surreal sequence when right before he escapes the Black Lodge, he goes through that ocean thing, and it's very surreal. Then he goes into that room, and he sees a woman with her face kind of covered up. Yes. Then there's these, like, demons after him, and then he ends up in the outer space, and he sees the Admiral saying Blue Rose. That's a really bizarre scene.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Obviously David Lynch can sometimes, even be slightly self-indulgent. He's clearly pushing the envelope to such an extent. He may push it. In the first 20 minutes of episode 3 of the new series, I remember watching this and going, is this really what the new show is going to be like? It's almost video art. And it really had no connection to the original series. Like, the Purple Room, what the hell is that? No one knows. And I guess, that's fine. I guess it was a kind of other area that exists, in the beyond that's, sort of different in a way to the Red Room. As I said, maybe that was purgatory, and the Red Room I think is hell, and the White Lodge we haven't been to yet, but you never know, we might end up in it by the end of the new series.
Oh yeah, you don't see the White Lodge, but maybe
the White Lodge is obviously heaven. When I did my Yates film, The Second Coming, I was looking at the kind of occult war that occurred between W.B. Yeats and Aleister Crowley, and that was really interesting to me. And obviously Yeats was very much interested in esoteric and the occult. But he was clearly a white magician, Like, he wasn't interested in evil, as a way to gaining power. He was sort of interested in, poetry, and that's why he was such an incredible genius, I think. But Crowley really was interested in evil and was quite happy to deal in, I don't know what the fuck he got up to, but I imagine a lot of no good.
Yeah, we did a whole podcast about Crowley. I don't want to go off on too long of tangent, but he was definitely fascinated by evil forces, but he also was I think he was a political dissident. He had these subversive ideas. I don't agree with people like Alex Jones who say, oh, he is part of the New World Order, the Crowleyan elites, and I think at the same time he was a subversive.
I find Alex Jones, even though a lot of what he says can be quite solid, but I always think he embellishes it in hyperbole and in hysteria.
Yeah, he's an entertainer. Oh, I like how the psychiatrist, what's his name, turns into an Alex Jones type character.
Dr. Jacoby is the new
Alex Jones. Dr. Jacoby in the new show has a podcast where he's a conspiracy theorist.
David Lynch is actually is a conspiracy theorist.
He's on Alex Jones's show.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He's a 9/11 truther. And I might be able to try and get him, get him to interview. I mean, he doesn't. I don't think he probably wants to be interviewed. But I do know some people who know him, so obviously I'll try and reach out. But it's just an interesting collection of events. But yeah, I think there are various characters in Twin Peaks that represent elements of David Lynch's own life. Jacoby is this kind of weird, Alex Jones conspiracy theorist. I've seen a number of videos where Lynch has talked about that. I think Lynch often shies away from certain things. Obviously in Hollywood, I think he would be quite sympathetic to elements of the alt-right. That would be my feeling, even though he has a kind of hippie element to his work that would probably lead him away from it. So
I imagine kind of alt-left. He was involved with this fringe alt-left third party called
Transcendental Meditation.
Transcendental Meditation. It's called the Natural Law Party. They're really into transcendental meditation, but I looked over their platform, and I would describe them. They're kind of like the Green Party, but without the cultural Marxist elements. So you could say that they're kind of like an alt-left party, but they're kind of not around anymore.
Was as a kind of a reaction to David Lynch's interest in transcendental meditation. I remember I was at university and I was studying philosophy, and I had to write a thesis on something, and I was obviously interested in right-wing political thought and fascist political theory and everything. And I thought, well, everyone else is really boring and doing like an article on Derrida or Foucault or someone like this, or Deleuze, which is, and I thought, well, I'm going to actually invent something, like that no one's ever thought of before, And then I thought, well, what could that possibly be, and I thought there's this huge kind of network of ideas related to the right wing and fascism that have sort of been buried since World War II. And I just thought, and that somehow this would, and I thought, what about a fascism that was like self-transcending, that kept reinventing itself? And I remember when David Lynch called himself a cultural, transcendental, he was into transcendental meditation. I remember I was like 29, I think that's for pussies. I'm into transcendental fascism, and I thought it was more, it had teeth, And it sounded meaner, and I liked the sound of it.
Well, that's Richard about the little kind of sexual illusions that are in the show. We talked about it a little bit earlier about how Twin Peaks clearly represents a woman's breasts and so on. I don't know if you've discovered any other little nuggets. I've been going through the show.
I wasn't thinking about that. Mark Dyer, who we had on the show, he was saying that the Twin Peaks represents the duality of good and evil. That's his take on it. But they could be massive tits.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really just a play. Obviously, it's not even real. It's just a pun, and it's not a major issue. But clearly, sex is a major part of what's going on in Twin Peaks. I remember in the new episode of episode one of the new series, in that weird room in New York when that kind of hot girl came up Californication.
Madeline Zeman.
Because we're all waiting for something to happen inside that box. And when she turned up and they were kind of flirting like they were going to have, I just immediately said, they're going to have sex, and when they have sex, the demon will appear. Yeah, because one of the real things about the occult that I learned from studying it is the key to it, and it's meant to be a secret, but a lot of people know it, is sex magic. Sex magic is what attracts the forces from the other dimensions. And I think that could be quite true.
Jerking off to anime porn brought in the power of Keck to get Trump elected.
Maybe.
Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? This is the first I'm hearing about that.
Count Fosco, what do you think about the scene where Audrey comes on to Cooper and he turns her down?
I thought it was a little bit of a letdown. I mean, I I kind of expected him to have to do that just because he's, you know, this Buddhist and so on. But I don't know. I kind of wanted there to be more fireworks after that, but he just had other interests.
Yeah, I mean, he later on you find out he was traumatized by this woman he was in love with getting murdered by his assistant. But originally you think Cooper is almost like, he's like a boy, and originally you see him as kind of like a Boy Scout, like he's so by the books. And then
that's
Audrey
what
comes
I was thinking.
Him,
that
and
that
like,
is actually
professional.
Yeah, like I've talked to people who are policemen, ex-policemen. They don't act anything like this FBI agent. He really is a Boy Scout. That is what he sounds like to me. Everything about him, like he's just way too excitable about little things.
Yeah, I think you know, Dal Cooper. I mean, David Lynch's CV, whenever he would just, you know, give it to media, was like, you know, Eagle Scout, you know, 1963, that was it. You know what I mean? That's all he would provide. There's an element of that to his whole persona, of this 50s straight arrow, you know, and the Jimmy Stewart from Mars. I mean, you know, he's a very interesting character, and he has an absolutely unique personality that clearly is a representation of kind of a 50s kind of ethos. But there's, you know, there's two forces at play within his whole work. There's his whole 50s thing, and, you know, a lot of that is very positive and is like a romanticism and nostalgia. But there's clearly a lot of, there's a kind of like a lot of dark and evil energy in the work of David Lynch that's really quite profound, like, and deep.
I know a lot of liberals have tried to say his films are an attack on small-town America, how it has that this dark underbelly. I mean, the same with the Blue Velvet, but I think that's a really shallow critique. I don't think
that's true.
I don't agree with that at all. I think it's stupid.
No, he's clearly, you know, his films are very not multicultural. We can say that as an alt-right observation. You know, he's had, like, hardly any black actors in his entire oeuvre. Occasionally they will turn up, and there's a new one.
In the original film, there's two black characters. There's the coach, and then there's the FBI investor, and then there's the Josie, who's Asian, and then there's the Native American chief. But I'd say for the most part, he depicts a town that's a very kind of homogenous, like a 1950s style town.
The level of multiculturalism is the kind of multiculturalism you'd see in a 50s show. Every now and then an Indian would turn up, or every now and then there'd be the black janitor or the black whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
I think Bob is a little bit kind of ethnic.
Bob, I think, you know, look, maybe you know, like Latin American, but like Frank Silver was played by, you know, he was like a guy, prop master. What's that screaming?
It sounds like porn. But
you guys, stop for a minute, can you now?
could I butt in here for a second just to give another thought with regards to the politics of Twin Peaks? To me, what's interesting, and maybe this is just my left-leaning self coming out, is that in Twin Peaks, the horror that is happening in the town, this sort of chaos that is descending upon the town when the murder of Laura Palmer happens, is coming from inside rather than from an outside force. It's within the town. The killer is within the town. That's why I feel like the second story arc where Del Cooper's nemesis, the other FBI agent, comes in, I feel like it falls apart a little bit at that point. I feel like what makes the show strong is that there's a horror from within, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it has elements of that, yes. I mean, obviously with the original Twin Peaks, I mean, the killer was the murder victim's father. So, I mean, he couldn't be more close to home than that. And which really is obviously most murders and things that happen by a family member, domestic abuse, child abuse, it all deals with elements of that. And I guess the film, it was so strange that people didn't think that he would play that card, I think, because I don't know. I mean, it's kind of quite heavy to play that card, you know. And, you know, I think that obviously the element of Bob is an element of some kind of demonic possession that I guess provides a kind of almost excuse for evil in a way. But, like, I don't think David Lynch is trying to excuse evil behavior. I think he just thinks that
you know, when people commit very evil acts, you know, it's like they are possessed, or maybe they are possessed at times. I don't know, but it's clearly some kind of observation of that, and you know that there is a kind of network of evil, and it seems within the world of David Lynch to operate within the system of electricity, which is an interesting kind of philosophical observation. I mean, you know, if you were to show electricity to someone from 300 years ago, so to take any device we have now, you would be a witch and burned immediately. You know what I mean? Like, and I've read Aleister Crowley talk about this, that essentially modern science is black magic. You know, things like, you know, I mean, the atom bomb is alchemy, for example. You know, that, like, there's a lot of secret stuff going on here that's got to do with the occult, and that science has, in a way, tapped into it, and this is why it's become so explosively dangerous. You know, because technology, you know, people always say religion will destroy the world. I mean, as long as we have bows and arrows, religion will never destroy
the world. That is the theme of the new Twin Peaks. I think it will be the battle between technology and the supernatural, the attempts of these powerful, kind of secretive individuals trying to utilize technology to tap into the power of the Black Lodge. I think that's what the new series will be about.
One thought I did have on that, and this is a take on what Joe just said about looking at this through a kind of a left-wing lens. If we remove the spirituality from the show, if we remove the spiritism, the possession, it's a story about a millionaire who runs a brothel, a girl who works there, and a father who murders her daughter, maybe if he finds out.
I think it's more than that, though, at the same time. Richard described it as demonic possession. When I watched the original series, I saw it as, you know, the monsters from the id, as you know, a Jungian or a Freudian would say. But I think we're still describing the same thing in just different ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's one of the great things about Lynch's work, that he can deal with almost, you know, psychology, sexuality, religion, theology, the occult, you know, good and evil. I mean, all these kind of ideas, and then mix them all up in this kind of brew that's uniquely him. He really is clear, an extraordinary artist of talent. And, you know, we're seeing an amazing work play out every week, even though it's more surreal than maybe we expected. But then, of course, with Lynch, why did we not expect it to be completely surreal, you know?
This is a little off topic, but Count Fosco, as a Canadian, what do you think about the portrayal of Canada as this kind of nefarious place?
I don't think I've ever seen Canadians depicted like that before.
The Mexican drug cartels, but it's like a French Canadian drug cartel who's involved in like sex trafficking.
The only other place I can think of where I've seen Canadians depicted like that is in the cartoon Archer, basically.
What about South Park? All the Canadians have squareheads.
Oh, yeah. I don't watch South Park, but
well, that's
I refuse to watch South Park.
What do you think about Ben Horn's, like, when he has this whole nervous breakdown and he becomes a General Lee? That's hilarious.
It is strange. I mean, I think there were many stories that occurred in season two of Twin Peaks. They're peripheral, and there are things in this. Like, you know, it's fun. It's fun with the Dr. Jacoby thing. You know, he's turned into Alex Jones. But I don't think that's going to have a lot of relevance to the main story of the new series.
No, these little characters like Ben Horn, Dr. Jacoby, and Shelley, they're depicted, but I don't think they're going to play a major role.
Yeah, no, I guess that's it. You know, and you know, I guess he just takes the time. Like in life, we meet different people at different times, and you know, I mean, all the surreal stuff that happens in David Lynch. I mean, we've all done things in life that are kind of like Lynchian moments. That's very David Lynch kind of moment, or you know what I mean? Like, so he's making an observation on something that's quite real, but he just seems to have a real portal into that. And then, you know, we'll make work that riffs on things that, you know, have a basis in reality, but seem like a skewered or, you know, surreal reality. And, you know, I think that's obviously one of the major things that makes his work so interesting.
Another thing people say about David Lynch is that he's just kind of weird, eccentric, and edgy just for the sake of it. But I think that's another major misconception.
No, he doesn't do it for the sake. It's quite serious. Because
there is a very deep layers to most of his work, especially Twin Peaks. There's many layers to it. He touches on so many crucial themes culture, politics, spirituality, absolutely, the subconscious, psychology, human nature. Interesting, and he's kind of popular with a wide variety of people. He does have a kind of cult following among a lot of kind of artsy Swipple types. But I've also met a lot of right-wing types who like David Lynch as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I said, I do think the alt-right can enjoy his work, because it really does present a kind of more 1950s, you know, like, when America was great, you know, that Trump is trying to get back a little bit, you know, a view of the world. And also up around Portland and up around, Washington State and Seattle, you know, it's a lot whiter, America, up around there. I mean, you know, when I was in Portland, you know, I studied with Charles Pound, you know, who's the guy who distributes Death in June. And, you know, I met up with Sean Partridge, and I met up with Jack Donovan. And these are all guys, you know, around that. It's actually very, very Twin Peaks-y in that area. It looks like Twin Peaks. You know, there are Douglas firs everywhere, and it's just got a kind of Twin Peaks vibe. And I actually went to the town, obviously, of Twin Peaks. Snooklebee Falls.
Where it's found. What was the actual town like? I think it's near... It's about an hour east of Seattle in the mountains.
I had dinner at the Double R, and all the major locations, are there. And there's a road that's around the area, and then you're driving down it, and you go, that's the opening shot of Twin Peaks. You just realize you're standing within the opening shot of Twin Peaks, which is really quite amazing. But, it's well worth doing, and obviously I think a lot of people will be doing it after the new show.
So those landmarks you went to, so you have the waterfall, the Great Northern, the Roadhouse, the Double R. Which ones did you visit, and which ones are real?
They're all real. They're all there. I mean, just about everything is there. The exterior locations, the school is there. I think the Twin Peaks, Sheriff's Department is there, but it's another kind of building. So it's interesting to see, and obviously it's different to how you envisage Twin Peaks. When you go there,
it does have a different feeling, and it's kind of like when you go to visit a city for the first time, you have this vision of what it's like based on what you've seen in film. And if you go there, I'm sure if you go to Twin Peaks in real life, it's going to have a very different feeling.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, obviously, though, you know, and you get to see, you know, I think it's if you really are a fan of his work, it's interesting to see how he constructs the town of Twin Peaks from the various real locations there, and creates this vision of this other kind of all-American apple pie town with a kind of like darkness on the inside, or a kind of edgy quality to it. It's just a gift to his talent that it's really a small country town, really, with like just, various interesting looking places, and then he's just used them all in this show. And, I think it's, well worth a visit for fans. And, you know, if you Yanks, if you're in the area, just, you know, jump in the car and go check it out.
Well, let me talk about philosophy and, I guess, David Lynch's work. But first, with David Lynch, I do like Eraserhead a lot, and some of his cartoons and his older stuff. I like his vary of when he's an artist doing these weird eccentric things. I know Twin Peaks is well talked about, and as well some of his other works as well, especially Blue Velvet gets beat like a dead horse all the time.
Yeah, Blue Velvet is probably... The closest to Twin Peaks out of all of them.
And I do like Dune a lot, as I very appreciate, but I do like the horror version of Lynch, and I like to see him as a horror director. And as I said this before, everything seems to be, you know, Lynchian horror in some terms. You know, it's not the avant-garde Lynch, but the horror Lynch, where things are scary and strange because you can't assume it. Like, if you're in bed at night and a horseman comes in your room, you're just scared shitless. You don't know why, and it's this kind of...
It's this weird... whole... It's not so much... I mean, you could say there is shock value in, like, the new Twin Peaks with the decapitated body put together with the man and the ear in Blue Velvet, but a lot of it is just creating this otherworldly, surreal atmosphere, which can be... that's actually more effective than just going through the kind of gore and violence. Remember when we interviewed Dilworth, the cartoonist, he was saying that he doesn't like violence and gore, but he's interested in creating kind of, his cartoons are very surreal, inspired by Dolly, and he's just was talking about creating that kind of, just a feel.
Mm-hmm. Dilworth is interesting because some of his stuff is, you know, totally horror stuff. There's a genre, a movement that I like called folk horror, there's a book on a Facebook page called Full Car Field Studies. It's on Lulu.
Wicker Man.
Was that?
Wicker Man.
Yeah, Wicker Man and stuff and films like that or general.
Oh, I love Wicker Man. Yeah,
and it's great. And there's a whole Bible of it. And it's a great book, and it really sets out a movement of the folk horror genre. It's very much like pagan elements of from Wicker Man and other things. And music like Boards of Canada and Brian Eno. Yes. And you add that as the premier folk horror band, and there's this whole lifestyle culturalism to that.
Maybe I should make a folk horror film. You're inspiring me now talking about this. You know, because that is an actual genre that I have never really studied. Obviously, and I mean, I've never really given it much intellectual thought, but it's definitely, there are a number of films that deal with that theme. And in a way, yeah, I think that Twin Peaks could be called folk horror in a weird way, because it deals with the community, and it deals with strange events, and there's a kind of, almost Wicker Man kind of element to it.
We are getting close to the end of the show. Okay. But before I wrap things up, does anyone want to comment on what they expect to get out of the new season of Twin Peaks?
You go first, gentlemen.
I have to watch it. It looks good. But at the current moment, I've been watching new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000. So
that's a good show.
Well, I haven't watched the new Twin Peaks either, but I'm really looking forward to it. I'm glad to hear that Russ Tamblyn is back as Dr. Jacoby. He's one of my favorite character actors. So I'm definitely going to be watching it soon.
Excellent. You know, I mean, obviously I'm watching it every week. Every Monday, it's Sunday night in America. So I watch it religiously every Monday, and I'll be doing that every week up till the end of it. You know, I think that, we've touched on some interesting themes, and I guess we'll probably need to do a part two. You know, let's put a bookend in this, and let's come back to it, develop some of the ideas and themes we're discussing here. Because at this moment, exactly what the Twin Peaks, new Twin Peaks show will be, we're not fully, I believe it's going to pick up speed. I believe that Cooper is on a pilgrimage back to Twin Peaks, and and it's going to be, even though it's a very broad net at the moment, what he's showing in the new show, that in the end it will all end up in Twin Peaks. And, I think it will be, the ending, I feel, will be strong. So fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Twin Peaks is very unpredictable. The original Lynch is unpredictable. I think it will touch on a lot of the themes of basically about, the original one was about the journey to the Black Lodge, so it's interesting to see whether the new one maybe will be a journey to the White Lodge, who knows.
I believe that you summed it up right there. I believe that's what's happening, and that the White Lodge will be associated with the town of Twin Peaks, with the kind of innocence, with the kind of white picket fence of the American 50s, which where he will link heaven and, the idea of America at its, great post-war imperial height. And I think that's the final statement that David Lynch is going to be making to everybody. So there it is.
More comment in there. I wanted to ask Richard too about in film school when we learned about David Lynch, there was a large emphasis on how he's very intuitive as a filmmaker.
Yes.
When something happens while he's filming, he finds a way to include it in his work. And I just wanted to comment on his intuitiveness.
Absolutely. I think all great filmmakers are like that. Even Stanley Kubrick was like that, who planned everything, but then when something turned up that he really liked, it would change on the spot. I think, I try and do that as much as possible. I think it's great to go in with a very strong plan, strong script, strong narrative, etc. But then, reality presents things sometimes and that are more magical than you could ever plan. And, is one of the great magics of cinema in a way, that you can use these things. And that's something I tried to do a bit with the Second Coming Volume 2, the new film I made, where I, cast people who are a bit like the characters they were playing. And they were like, they were like Andy Warhol kind of superstars,
When's
like,
the Second Coming Volume 2 going to come out?
Oh, when? Well, I nearly finished it. Like, it'll be finished within a month. So I'm going to begin playing festivals. So, I may just end up sticking it online like I did Volume 1 within the next 3 to 6 months. But it's definitely going to play some festivals first. And then, hopefully I'll get it released as a double DVD set in Australia and the UK. And, and it's been a massive project for me. So, hope you enjoyed it. Volume 1 is online, as you well know.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Richard Wollstonecroft, Pill Eater, Count Fosco, and J.G. Michaels for being on. Go check out the new Twin Peaks
All right.
Thank you. But hey, great speaking to you all, guys, and it's a pleasure. And let's do this. Just do a part two once the show finishes.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. See you, Richard.
Great day. See ya.
Bye-bye.